World Watchers. It is program number 772, September the 22nd, 1986. Remember that you can send a self-addressed stamped envelope right to me in care of P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922, and I will mail you the bibliography sheets that accompany these broadcasts. If you send an envelope once a month and say, I want the sheets for the month of August or the month of October, September, then you'll get four sheets for the price of the same postage stamp, and you can start collecting these and putting them in chronological order to follow the events as they flow. The Reverend Andrew Greeley has written some novels about the Vatican and some nonfiction books. He has a new book called Confessions of a Paris Priest. He was offering the Vatican $1 million for some special studies groups or whatever, and the Vatican turned down the money because they don't like his novels. And Greeley was very honest in the newspapers, and he said, how come they take away my money? They don't want the tainted money of an author, but they take it from the mafia, the lords of the organized crime, and from assassins, and don't blush to take money from them, and but they don't want his money. And then Greeley said, in terms of the books that he writes, he said that he's criticized because he who reports the truth is assumed to have caused the problems. And that's very true. People who do research on assassinations and investigative work into genocidal intent of people in power and how they got that power, even if it means wiping out all the trees and forests and oceans and the ecology of the earth and the peoples of the earth, those who point the finger at the directors of this insanity are often the people that are criticized, whereas we researchers or authors don't cause the problem. We simply report what it is. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle had a small item this morning, and it has to do with a new book out by Dan Moldea, M-O-L-D-E-A, titled Dark Victory, Ronald Reagan, Music Corporation, and the Mob. Now, just last week, I started part one of Jonathan Quitney's article that was in Wall Street Journal on the Lorimar Productions, on Lacoste in California, Las Vegas, the Teamsters' money and the Mafia money behind the large TV film industry today. And I want to continue that pretty soon. I'll pick that up next week. But this fits right along in that. And this book, without even having read it yet, just read several articles about it, will open up whole new doors into the politics of California and the Mafia and the selection of our presidents, such as Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. The San Francisco Chronicle story says Ronald Reagan was investigated and ultimately cleared in a federal criminal probe in the 1960s into suspected payoffs from Hollywood entertainment conglomerate Music Corporation of America to Reagan and other officers of the Screen Actors Guild. Now, MCA is very important because that's a corporation that brought Ronald Reagan from Illinois to Warner Brothers, and I believe were instrumental in handpicking him even from the Christian college that he went to in Illinois, and not so much as reporting baseball games on the air, but for a lot of other things that he immediately came and got a contract at Warner Brothers. So MCA was under investigation for paying off suspected persons that Robert Kennedy, as the Attorney General, was investigating. The parts of the book described in the newspapers say, as part of the investigation, Ronald Reagan's tax returns from 1952 to 55 were subpoenaed by the Antitrust Division of the Justice Department under Attorney General Robert Kennedy, according to author Dan Moldea. The Justice Department sought Reagan's tax returns the week after the actor spent the afternoon of February the 5th, 1962, testifying before a federal grand jury impaneled to investigate suspected payoffs and possible criminal activity involving MCA. And this also would explain the antipathy that Ronald Reagan had towards Robert Kennedy, who was murdered in the Ambassador Hotel when Reagan was governor of California, and the links of Reagan and the Mafia to the suppression of the assassination information on John Kennedy, and later, of course, of Robert Kennedy, of insisting this investigation never be opened up, and it never has to this day. And we'd never heard much about the battle of Robert Kennedy with Ronald Reagan in California. He was the governor from 1966 to 1974, so that the activities of Kennedy against Reagan were before he was even governor. The article continues, the author has based portions of his book on 6,000 pages of Justice Department documents obtained 2.5 years ago under Freedom of Information Act by the entertainment industry publication Daily Variety, which ran an extensive story on the probe. The grand jury was part of a Justice Department antitrust investigation of alleged monopolistic practices in the entertainment industry, which has the largest talent agency in Hollywood, the MCA. Reagan's grand jury testimony discloses that the actor repeatedly could not recall the details of a waiver the Screen Actors Guild granted MCA in 1952 that allowed MCA to engage in unlimited production of television shows. And those are the shows that Ronald Reagan, of course, was participating in that got him tied in with General Electric Theater and made his face known all over the world before he was placed as governor in California in 1966. MCA was the only Hollywood talent agency ever given a blanket exception by the union. The waiver meant that MCA was acting as the employer of the actors. It was also their agents. At the time the union granted the waiver, Reagan was president of the Actors Guild, and MCA was his agent. Reagan told the grand jurors the waiver was given to MCA to stimulate employment in the TV industry. Employment was down at the time. A memo by the head of the Justice Department investigator on the case, written the week after Reagan's grand jury appearance, said, "We have taken steps to obtain the income tax returns of Ronald Reagan and seven other Screen Actor Guild officers whose talent agent was the MCA. The income tax returns, according to the memo, were to be one aspect in further development of the payola aspect of the investigation." Well, it wasn't soon after that, a year after that, that John Kennedy was murdered, and then not shortly after that, Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and that made the way for Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan to get into the White House. Another important article today, which I will not go into great details about, I just want to mention, is the appearance of the name George Abdallah, the terrorist and the brother of many other terrorists in Europe, and their links to the Christian Lebanon connections. A large story in the San Francisco Chronicle, I'm sure it was covered all over the country, and it was from the New York Times. International plot could be behind the French terror wave. Now, the importance of this story of George Abdallah, and I'm not going to detail it now, but we'll go into it at great length, is his links to the Italian Red Brigade and terrorists in West Germany, because the Italian Red Brigade was set up by Francesco Pazienza and the Italian intelligence, just as the SLA was set up by our CIA and our Defense Department and FBI out here in California. And this Abdallah worked closely with and joined George Habash's Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And for those of you who read my article on the downing of the Korean airline with Larry McDonald on it, it goes into George Habash and his terrorist group that were linked to Larry McDonald in Georgia and from Lebanon to Chile to the dean of the secret police and to the Chilean government of Pinochet. That was a network of terrorism. The sole purpose is to instigate through that strategy of tension enough anger and bombings and tension that eventually people will ask for the likes of Hitler and Mussolini to end all this terrorism. As a matter of fact, Mr. Le Pen of the Nazi Party in France has been very vocal about the bombings, and the French are worried about their rights being taken away because of the terrorist activity. And in this country, under the guise of terrorism and drugs, we are handing over our rights via Congress without even thinking this through. So it is working, and it's interesting that a man who also has been identified as being responsible in the 1982 murder of Lieutenant Colonel Charles Ray, he was an American intelligence and an attaché in Paris. So the killing of Americans, and just as Aldo Moro, the prime minister in Italy, was killed, and a lot of other people, innocent people, these links of terrorism always go back to the CIA connections in Lebanon. And if the real story gets unraveled because the French government is actually sick and tired of this terrorism, they will finger those people who were responsible for the Bologna bombing, the strategy of tension throughout Europe, the late Otto Skorzeny's team, the present alive Licio Gelli in South America, and Stefano Della Calle, who lives in Peru, and they would find that the tensions around the world eventually have to be solved by identifying them as part of fascist elements who take people at random to kill, some in particular and others at random, in order to force a police state to stop the terrorism. And once the police state is in, they're not going to tell you that they created the terrorism. And so that these stories linking out now and through hard investigative work remind me of when Charles de Gaulle wanted to find out who was trying to kill him and came up with the Permandex operation, the team that hired assassins to go all over the world and expose that. And it was written up, this material, in Farewell America and also in the Torba document, a lot of it, the result of French investigation when they got sick and tired of taking pot shots at Charles de Gaulle. Now, this is a story that has not made many newspapers. I haven't seen it except in one or two. Tom Davis from Tom Davis Books was driving through Santa Barbara, came up from Los Angeles, and found a large article in the newspapers in Santa Barbara. The newspaper is called the News Press, and I want to share this information with you now. It's very important. The one story I have, San Jose Mercury, that came in addition to the Santa Barbara papers, titled Plot Story Leads to Arrest. It says, a man who claimed he knew of a bizarre mafia plot to kill President Reagan was arrested when the police discovered he was wanted on a New York City warrant for criminally negligent homicide. Now, the news is already slanted to say it was a bizarre plot. The plot he told about wasn't bizarre at all, and it could be have reality. But the media and the Secret Service are playing this down, which, of course, endangers the president's life even more. David B. Rothman, 29, was interviewed by the Secret Service on Thursday for several hours following his arrest at a house where he was staying with friends. Secret Service agent Al Joaquin said in Los Angeles the agency doesn't believe Rothman's assassination story at all. Rest assured, it is not something of any substance, the Secret Service said. Santa Barbara is 25 miles southeast of the president's home at Rancho Del Cielo, where he and Mrs. Reagan were spending their vacation. The police said they believe Rothman came to Santa Barbara last month. He was staying with friends, and he told the warrant officers after his arrest, he wasn't even aware that there was a no-bail warrant out for him. I'm sure if a man was wanted on a warrant, or even thought there was, or if he was involved with a murder, he wouldn't go to the police department that are securing the life of the President of the United States and tell him where he lives and give his name if he was really a part of a murder back east. So anyway, he goes to the police department in Santa Barbara or goes to the Secret Service, and they don't believe him. Officer Richard Abney said the information was sketchy from the computer system that told about the warrant for Rothman. It was issued in May, and Rothman was wanted for a criminal negligent homicide in Queens, New York. He was checked for warrants after he met with police and Secret Service agents on Tuesday. He claims he knew of an assassination plot against the president. Police Chief Gerald Lowry said Rothman claimed he uncovered the plot by a New York organized crime family to kill Reagan and also other prominent people. He learned about it from New York and came to California a month ago, and the police didn't take him seriously. Another small article from the Sacramento Bee says an author was arrested on a negligent homicide. The first story didn't say he was an author or what he wrote, but the third article, the large article from the Santa Barbara News Press that Tom Davis picked up, goes into much more detail and tells you who the author is. And this article said, police listen, then they arrest the man who brings them the story. A 29-year-old man told the Santa Barbara police that he had information about a mafia plot to assassinate Ronald Reagan, and he was put into the county jail. David Rothman was arrested on Encore Drive at a home where he's staying with friends. He was later booked at the jail and remained there while the officers tried to find out his assassination story and the Queens, New York murder case that he allegedly was involved in. Rothman, who officers believe came to Santa Barbara last month, approached them early this week with the plans to kill Ronald Reagan. In a letter to Police Chief Lowry, Rothman said a major New York crime family was planning the killings to neutralize the government's ability to interfere with its activities. And a lot of top mafia people have gone to trial in New York. The trial started just this past week, and Ronald Reagan claims he's going to crack down on drugs and crime. The article continues, President Reagan has repeatedly stated he favors an all-out war against organized crime. His recent anti-drug abuse program is part of his stand and ultimately leads to more pressure on organized crime. Rothman, who said he is the son of a former CIA assassination expert, is the author of a 1982 book about his father's life. He claims he learned of the plots doing research on the writing for his book, that he was aware of different plots. Now, the book he wrote is called Mr. Death, and I have that book, and Tom referred me right away to the book, Mr. Death, written by David Rothman, The Life of a CIA Assassination Expert. So his son would have information about crime families. He's not somebody that comes in off the street cold. He is telling the Secret Service about this, and they're putting him down. So he was forced to go to the newspaper, the News Press in Santa Barbara, because the Secret Service and police totally ignored what he was saying. In this book, as a son of a former CIA assassination expert, he tells about his father's life and so forth, as I said before. All I know is that the president is in serious danger. He approached the police because he said, I don't know what else to do with the information. I believe it is my moral responsibility to do everything I can to make sure before it is too late. He met with the Secret Service and the police. They listened to his story. They sent him on his way. And then they checked his background, and that's the time where they decided that they would pick him up and lock him up and ignore the warnings of what he said. After his meeting with the author, Rothman dropped a letter at the Santa Barbara News Press saying he was unhappy with the police response to his concerns. They just said, go home and on your way. He said the president should be warned directly about current plots against him and the weakness in the security that surrounds him and his family. Now, keep in mind that running as vice president and winning with vice president is George Bush, who was the former director of the CIA, who wasn't bashful in his role in the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt in Washington, D.C. Even though he was only CIA director about a year and a half, there was an explosion and murder involving the Central Intelligence Agency and the Chilean secret police, the DINA, the same team that I mentioned that worked with George Habash, named in this article I just previously referred to in the terrorism and assassination teams. And young Rothman is trying to tell the President of the United States that the people around him, and obviously the Santa Barbara police and security, really don't care. He said, I'm willing to place myself in potential danger if it succeeds to stop the assassination. I don't agree with Reagan on a lot of things, but I believe in our system of government, and it is wrong to assassinate public officials, and the only way to transmit this information to him has to be through a newspaper. And that's pretty pathetic that the police send him home, and then after he contacts the newspaper, they lock him up and don't give any background on why they're locking him up. As best as they know, in 1985, there may have been an arson involved, the police said. We're not sure what we have. They locked him up without any bail, and I guess he's still locked up for them coming to tell him about the plan to kill the president. And then the Santa Barbara Press said, in his letter to the police, he claimed to be the author of Mr. Death, The Life of a CIA Assassination Expert by his son. It was published by Playboy Press in 1982. The publishing company is not in business. His claim couldn't be verified. Well, they could have called a lot of bookstores and so forth and verified that that's a person. And from the book, on several pages of the book that he wrote, David B. Rothman, on the cover of it, he describes a politically chilling, sexually explicit, emotionally revealing true story of a complex man who designed death weapons for the CIA, and his son searched to uncover the truth about his father. He was a secret designer of weapons for the CIA. They called him at the agency Mr. Death. Before the interview's publication, before Playboy published the book, Mr. Death died of a heart attack, probably one of those sudden, mysterious heart attacks, when he revealed to his son that he made weapons for the CIA that did assassinations. His son was only 19 years old, and he decided that he had wanted to write a book because with a high school education, he was an expert in weapons, and his father had told him about explosives and reptiles and pyrotechnics, and he had the secret life working for the CIA and so forth. He collected pornography, and he was a lonely man, he said, who died on his 41st birthday, having just about to been exposed for working for the intelligence agency making the weapons. On page 33 of the book, The kid describes, I saw a modified butane cigarette lighter. I asked if there had been more than one in the basement of his junk boxes. I asked what it was, and he told me point blank, with no extra emphasis, nothing startling to the revelation, and I accepted it and moved on, the kinds of weapons he made. What boy questions his father when his father drops a bomb like that, telling how he makes these weapons for the CIA that looks like a cigarette lighter? And you want to prove that you can be cool and be trusted, and he can tell you anything, and it won't go anywhere. He had told me things I never repeated to anyone. He told me he shot 9 men with 9 bullets from my metric Mauser on a faded nightmare road in Venezuela. He told me at the time he was a brilliant, aggressive arm of the group. He always referred to the group. He worked with them in the late 50s when this boy was 2 or 3 years old, and he never came out and said who the group was, but more to the point, what else could it be? And he tells about his experiences with them and the kind of shells they had, and a .22, and how it was it would cause a lot of shrapnel if you shot it. The .22s were different than other .22s. They exploded on impact. They were made for taking out heads of states or other undesirables, his father said, to pop their heads off. Literally, they would. He said, each one of these slugs will pop a human head like it's a gourd being hit by a .45 at close range. Be careful and have fun, he said to his son. I had lots of fun, lots of it. So those are just 2 references in the book by David Rothman. So Rothman took this appeal to Santa Barbara Press. And as I say, the wire services and other newspapers that I've taken haven't had a thing about it. I just want to mention that some of the people who are off, or some of the people suspiciously dying, and I've said this before, are not so very famous as heads of states. But there seems to be a pattern, and more I read the obituaries for young ages, and I'm cutting them out and saving them and trying to get some sense of how old people are when they're dying of cancers, particularly in the 40s and 50s. A subscriber to World Watchers, a long good friend who sends me many articles, sent me an obituary from her paper, Kansas City Star, just this past week. Died September the 1st, 1986. Miss Shirley F. Cromer. Miss Shirley Faye Cromer, 43, from Jefferson City, a former area teacher who was president of the Missouri National Education Association, the NEA, died Monday in a hospital in Springfield, Missouri. Miss Cromer was elected president of the Missouri NEA in 1985. Earlier, she taught at Oak Park High School for 19 years. She was vice president of Missouri NEA in 1983. Now, the letter I had about her obituary from the set newspaper said, Shirley is a close friend of mine. She was my roommate in San Francisco at the Democratic Convention in 1984. Another delegate was Gwen Giles, who also died of cancer this year at age 54. These are 2 delegates to the Democratic Convention. I sent her obituary earlier to you, which she did. She was the first woman state senator in Missouri. That week was a terrible one for the Missouri delegation. The NEA president, Iona Lewis, and Shirley Cromer, our vice president, were at a conference in Monterey, I guess it's in Iowa, in Monterey. Iona had an apparent heart attack, but she recovered. The third friend of theirs recovered from the heart attack. The day after your father died, this is my father, July 18th, and he was old enough, 94, and no mystery to that, but she said, my mother died. This is the delegate whose 2 friends died, and one of them almost died from an apparent heart attack. Gwen Giles, this is the survivor of the 3, Gwen Giles' husband and child were found dead on apparent murder-suicide. This is July the 18th, 2 years ago. And she goes into the details of those deaths. And, of course, the president of the National Education Association from, I believe it's New Hampshire, Krista McAuliffe, died on the Challenger plane, and she was a strong supporter of NEA when she died when the NASA Challenger blew up. So this is a little vignette of people from the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco, 2 dead and 1 almost dead, and the one who survived, it was not the one who survived, the one who died of cancer, her husband and 2 children also died this past year. And so that is a pretty dismal picture of people working together for certain causes, and a link that may be going on in 50 states or 150 cities, we don't know, because a lot of people aren't thinking of these connections It just happens that this particular person sees connections or is trying to understand them and called attention to these deaths of these people that she was associated with as active in the Democratic Party, and how quickly they leave this earth, and is there a question or a possibility that these people, as I say, are connected, their deaths are connected to each other. Speaking of deaths, there was an article about an aide of Ronald Reagan's, David Winston, who worked for his health group in the capacity of the health department, who was hit. It was a hit-run case in which he eventually died. He died a few weeks ago, but he was still in a coma when this particular article came out from the San Francisco Examiner, September the 11th, and it says, David Winston, the former top health advisor to Ronald Reagan, is in critical condition. He's 44 years old, suffering from head trauma, attacked by an unidentified motorist who has since been identified. There was confusion and conflicting testimony by witnesses at the scene. He had no identification on him when he was taken to the hospital, listed as John Doe, and they traced him from a key in his pocket to the hotel he was staying at, which is interesting to have no identification. But the article goes on, Winston served as Republican staff director of the Senate Labor and Human Resources Committee 1979 to 81, according to Director Hayden Bruce. Then it says, Brian said yesterday that Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, the ranking minority member of the committee, had dispatched an aide to San Francisco to look into the accident. Now, I thought that was not hilarious, but really interesting that Senator Edward Kennedy is looking into the hit-run case of a person, an advisor to Ronald Reagan from the health department, who was a staff director of the Labor and Human Resources Committee. I haven't been aware that Ted Kennedy sends investigators anywhere, even to Chappaquiddick maybe, or to his brother's assassinations. He probably did, but I've never read about it. But it was interesting that he was so anxious to send somebody, dispatch someone, to look into the cause of the accident, where I'm not aware that Senator Ted Kennedy has been interested in these accidents. And it seems strange that they made note of his curiosity into a hit-run case in San Francisco when there are so many of these things happening that, for all purposes, he seems to be looking the other way. And this is a television show that will be on this week. The date is September 24th. It will be put on by Public Broadcasting. And the man behind it is William Buckley, the production. And the movie is about the Soviet Union in 1932 to 1933, killing 10 million of its own people. And the thing that makes this so interesting is how much anti-Soviet material is being put out by the media in a barrage of actions or agent provocateur instigations that I think are escalating the arms race or the hope of that long dream of World War III. Now, William Buckley wrote a syndicated column, came out September the 6th, called Harvest of Despair. And in anniversary, 50th anniversary of this famine, the Canadian government and the United States Public Broadcasting are going to do a movie on the planned starvation. And what William Buckley is saying, it's not only in the past that the Russians have planned starvation, but it's going on in Ethiopia, and that it is time for people to know that Stalin crushed the people of the Ukraine by having a starvation plan in 1932 to 1933, which, in fact, it happened, according to the history books. There were 10 million people that starved in Russia, and I'm not making any apologies for starving 10 million people in Russia. The interesting thing is that the person who's going to have it on his broadcast on a two-part series is William Buckley, who is not against starvation, who is not against war, who only points out the Russian side, but is working very closely with and always has worked with people who had grander plans for starvation and murder than simply those 10 million people. Buckley, as a Knight of Malta and founder of Young Americans for Freedom, worked very closely in the Central Intelligence Agency with Reinhard Gehlen. Well, I've cited many times on my broadcast the book Gehlen's Spy of the Century and how Reinhard Gehlen's brother and father published books for Nazi Germany in which their goal after the Soviet Union was defeated was to turn the large number of people in the Ukraine into corpses by starving them. 50 million, you remember, would be slave labor. And then the other way to get rid of the subhumans would be to starve them. And This is quite detailed, and Reinhard Galen was not castigated. That was 50 million, and it would be done by the Germans. They said 40 million starvation and 50 million slaves, so take a few one way or the other. But Reinhard Galen, because of these plans published by his family for Germany, was brought to the United States to form the CIA. So there can be no objection to starvation as far as William Buckley is concerned. I'll take a one-minute break and continue with facts and figures on who is doing the starvation, if there's a most in this story.